In today's episode, we have Ayo Olajiga, a former investment banker with experience building businesses, serving clients, and structuring complex transactions across the African continent. Ayo is currently a co-founder and CEO of FoodPro Group Nigeria Limited. FoodPro is the largest indigenously owned and managed cashew nut processing company in Nigeria and has been processing cashews since 2013. Interviewing him on this episode, we have Hakim Jimo. Hakim is the founder of Veggie Victory, which started as Nigeria's first vegan restaurant to give people an experience of plant-based food and go out with a mission to bring a healthier and more sustainable lifestyle to Nigerians through vegan food options. Join us as we listen to their journey on entrepreneurship within the agribusiness space.
Welcome, and today we have Mr. Ayo Olajiga, the CEO of FoodPro, and we're happy to have this conversation here for Faith Foundation. Welcome.
Thank you.
And I think we can jump right in. If you could tell us a bit more about yourself, the background.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm Ayo Olajiga, the co-founder and CEO of FoodPro Limited. I'm an engineer by training. I've done various things from management consulting with McKinsey to investment banking with Brand Merchant Bank. And now I currently co-founded and run a company that does cashew snacks production. Yeah, so I mean, that's in a very nutshell who I am.
I think that's very modest. You're the cashew auger here in Nigeria.
Well,
probably what I read, the number one exporter.
Well, I think, you know, it depends on what product you're talking about, because at the moment, I mean, obviously they're the traders who move all the raw cashews in Nigeria out of the country, which is, I think, most of about 90% of what is grown in Nigeria is going to Vietnam and India for processing. And what we do is we take a portion of that, the remaining 10%, process into kernels, and then, you know, also roast into finished products under our Lion Cashew and Go-Nuts brand, which we sell domestically in Nigeria, and we also export to the US and the Netherlands. And we're hopefully, before the end of the year, we'll start to send products to the UK, finished products this time around, and South Africa.
Yeah, since it's an entrepreneurship program, let's talk more about your business. Starting from the beginning, how did it start? What was the idea, the funding, the structuring?
Well, I mean, so for us, we were not planning to do cashews. I mean, this goes back to as far back as 2010, when then I was sitting in a bank, and my partner and I, we were both actually living in South Africa at the time, and it was during the financial crisis, and we had seen how resilient the South African economy had been at that time in terms of absorbing all the blows, because pretty much South Africa produces everything it consumes, and the only thing they import are luxuries. So if those go up in price, nobody cares. And so we thought, you know, if you look, which is the opposite for Nigeria, almost everything we consume, but almost a large portion of what we use in Nigeria is imported. So we thought, okay, look, can we start to produce some of those things? So we got involved in the process where we looked at rice, didn't do that. We looked at corn, we looked at soya. And the first conclusion was growing something in Nigeria is extremely challenging. So first, I mean, I have to give my hat off for anyone that is growing anything in Nigeria, just because the structure of the market makes it very difficult to grow stuff. So anyone who's growing stuff out there, I mean, fantastic job. And then we thought, okay, fine, maybe what we do is we go into processing first, and then, you know, backward integrate into production. And at that point, another friend of ours had joined us, and the family happened to have had done cashew in the past, so they had some cashew links. And so we came in and we said, you know what, why don't we revive cashew processing? And so in 2010 we registered a company, and in 2012 we did our first export to the UK actually. And since then, you know, we've been upgrading our presence in the market. In 2015, 2016, we upgraded our factory. So I actually, for between 2010 and 2015, I was in the business full time. I just used to support the business on the sideline. So in 2016, you know, I resumed in the business as a CEO. And between that time and now, what we've done is, you know, launched two brands which are doing very well in Nigeria. You know, we export semi-processed products to the US and the Netherlands. And what we're trying to do now is A, you know, push more of our finished brands, our branded products into the foreign markets. And then also start to add, you know, new products in Nigeria. And, you know, because ultimately we would want to get to a point where we don't send semi-processed products anywhere. I mean, my own, so Africa produces 60% of raw cashews. Africa only processes maybe about 10%. Africa is, outside of Africa, not responsible for most of the products that the consumer consume. Mm-hmm. I think there's an opportunity for Africa to produce 60%, as we currently do, of the raw materials, and also 60% mm-hmm. of the finished products. And I think that's where, you know, every market, every player involved in cash on the African continent, that's where we need to be pushing towards, because that's where you create true wealth.
So just one, so you were a couple of friends, founding partners, and then the family had some ties to it, or how many were you? And then?
Well, I mean, at the beginning, there was just two of us. There was just two bankers at a barbecue in South Africa, a little bit of wine, and suddenly people started to drink. And I think that's what it was. And then, you know, we, in getting back to Nigeria, we, you know, we added another partner who was always on the ground doing it. And the family owned, had interest in cashews. So the three of us formed a company that started that process. Over time, we've added other shareholders to it. But it was, you know, two bankers at the beginning, had an entrepreneur. And then we've added one or two other bankers and some other private equity people.
You said you were management consulting and then became an investment banker, and that's when you made real money. So why now cashews? Was the investment banking peanuts and now you're doing cashews, or what?
I don't think investment banking is peanuts. I think, look, you know, so I've done...
I mean, you're going up, you know, and you said management consulting was nothing compared to investment banking, so why now entrepreneurship?
So from time to time I miss my management consulting days, because management consulting is purely about solving problems and solving different problems, or, you know, over time. And as, I mean, as a McKinsey consultant, you were always on your toes because you were working for, you know, I mean, experienced CEOs and CFOs and COOs, and you were always trying to solve very difficult business problems. So it was always challenging. And because you were moving from industry to industry, your brain was working, you know, maybe 38 hours a day, if there's anything like that. Then then I move into investment banking. Obviously, investment bankers make more money than everybody else. But investment banking is a little bit different from consulting. It's still very intellectual, but it's very focused. Once you've had a good investment banking year, the problems you encounter remain the same through the period, you know. And I spent about, you know, 10 years with Rand Merchant Bank. It was a lot more interesting because in that period I had moved to Nigeria, started a rep office for First Rand, ultimately registered an investment bank or merchant bank for First Rand, which is Rand Merchant Bank Nigeria, you know. So it was very interesting. And then, you know, then this challenge of, look, we've had this investment in cashews. What do we do with it? Because to take it to the next level, you needed to inject capital, and that's both financial capital and human capital. And we, between you and I, we tried to recruit a CEO for the business. We couldn't find. I mean, because it was just very difficult to find a professional manager who would grow a business. It's not what they do. They take over an existing business, and then, you know, maybe they help you increase it 20% year on year, but they don't, they're not interested in, oh, we have to, you know, we have to register the business, we have to fight through the growing pains. That's not what a professional manager mm-hmm. does. And then I thought, okay, look, maybe this is a challenge I should take on. I mean, it's, you know, or maybe in future, at some point, the reward will come to justify.
Yeah, that's what I was a bit curious.
Stepping away from investment banking, but it hasn't shown up yet.
You had a model career. You were a successful management consultant. Then you even topped it, making good money in even more in investment banking. I mean, you had it all. Why is it now that money-wise, you saw even further greener pastures in entrepreneurship, or was it more like, well, I've made enough, I'm giving back to the society, I want to help Nigeria? That step now?
Well, look, here's the thing. So if you pick up one of our products, especially the GoNuts under grams, you can read the story of one of my counters when I was in the factory with one of the workers, which cemented some of the things I wanted to do. I think, you know, entrepreneurship gives you a few things. You know, it's that maybe, you know, when you read the American stories, a lot of money, and maybe a lot of money will come. I definitely hope it comes. But first of all, entrepreneurship gives you freedom on your time. Because some of the things I find myself doing these days, I couldn't do it when I was in the bank because I didn't own my time. My time was owned by the bank, which, you know, and it depends on where you're called to do it, and that's how we're going to do. But now I can structure my time to say, you know what, I want to do it, this is when I want to do it. And that freedom is very important. Yeah, I mean, at least for me, is crucial. The second thing is, you know, when you look at Nigeria and you look at Africa at large, right? Africa needs businesses. Africa needs to create wealth. Africa needs to solve problems. Those problems are only going to be solved by businesses. They're going to be solved by entrepreneurs who look at an idea and say, you know what? I want to take on this idea and I want to eliminate this problem. I want to improve people's lives. Of course, my advice and my wish for every entrepreneur is you must make sure you do it profitably. Otherwise, it becomes a very soul destroying exercise. Because ultimately, you know, businesses exist to make profit. So, you know, and if there's any entrepreneur watching or listening, let's not get too romantic about, oh, I'm helping people but I'm losing money. It means that you can only help people for a short while. But if you're helping people and making profit, then you can help people for a long time. And for me, you know, entrepreneurship allows me, you know, that freedom, allows me to think widely and also to solve problems. It's almost like being back in my McKinsey days. It's only now, you know, my client is is Nigeria and the African continent.
Yeah. And I think 400 people are working with you.
I mean, at the peak of the season, we have, you know, about 400 people, about 90% women. And, you know, sometimes, you know, when you see what some of these people go through to get to work, you know, you start to ask yourself, you know, when you complain, like, oh, I didn't get... I didn't get to work on time because there was traffic somewhere, you know, or some of the things we complain about, which when you put it side by side by the challenges that the women that work with us face, make you look like a really ungrateful human being, you know. Because I mean, there was one of the women that I dealt with who walked, I think she used to walk 2 to 2.5 miles to get to work. And I used to be like, okay, so yeah, I mean, that's like exercise, right? Like real exercise. But you're not doing this exercise because you want to stay fit. You're doing this exercise because you want to survive. And, you know, when you start to look at those stories, it encourages you to do more, which is, you know, let's keep this business growing. Let's find a way to provide better wages. Let's find a way to provide transportation. Let's find a way to provide meals. I mean, when my manager told me that, look, if we provide 1 meal a day in the factory, we will not have any absenteeism. I was like, what do you mean? Says, some of these people sometimes survive on, they eat 3 times a week. I'm like, what do you mean people eat 3 times a week? But that's what happens. Those are the realities in our society. And I think, yeah, I know everybody's saying the government must do X, the government must do Y. Yes, they must do what they must do. It's only entrepreneurs creating successful businesses that will solve a lot of this problem.
Just one more time. So when I'm just seeing this picture, you in South Africa with your friend, some wine, and then you said, how much money are we putting down? You a million, I'm a million, and then and then where did it start? And then do you needed a factory, regulatory things, or how did
it come together? You know, so with food, I mean, the first thing is, you know, even though we did it the other way around, a little bit, the first thing you need to figure out, any business you're doing, is if we're to do it again, it's about market access. But what we did was, first of all, okay, fine, let's do the research about cashews. You know, one of our partners spent some time with a manufacturer of equipment in Vietnam. The three of us then attended the African Cashew Alliance, just trying to understand what the numbers are, you know. And then after a period of time, we registered the business. We then put additional investment to retool the factory, the existing factory. We had made connection with the former buyers of products from the former factory, and they were willing to, you know, buy from us to the extent that we met the standards. And that's how we started. And, you know, we obviously, there's the regulatory part is really about NAFTAQ. And that's how we got started.
I mean, now today you're at 5,000 tons.
Well, today we have capacity to process anything between 3,500 to 5,000 tons, depending on the type of product. I mean, back then I think we were, between 500 to 700 tons. You know, so yeah, so we've expanded our capacity from a volume perspective. My focus at the moment is expanding our capacity from a value perspective, which is, you know, from the factory straight to your table, so that we, you know, we eliminate non-value-adding players in between us and the market.
So you have the exporting part, and then you have the product, Lion Cashew.
Yes.
Different businesses.
They sit under the same roof. Lion Cashews is our flagship brand. That's what we came up with first. It's salted. It's sold across Nigeria. You know, the customers love it. We've come up with another brand, Go Nuts, and Go Nuts is where we do what we like to think, you know, different flavors, play around with it. You know, okay, what would happen if you put coconut and cashews together? Happens, people love it. Cinnamon, ginger, suya spice, and so under that brand we will do a lot of things. But Lion Cashews, we will keep it. It's black and gold. We'll keep it the way it is. It's classic. Stays. It has no followers, and we leave it there. And then all the developments we're going to do will come under Go Nuts. And you know, and I think that's how we're going to do it.
I mean, what strikes me about Lion Cashews, the situation about cashews is, you normally buy this thing that looks like tied in a plastic, but yours is a very polished and international standard packaging.
No, look, I feel that, first of all, you know, packaging is everything, or almost everything, because the way you present the food to me determines whether I want to eat it or not. That's one. The second thing is, when you come from as a food player, your first and foremost, it should be food safety, right? It is not safe, all that stuff that is tied in nylons being sold in traffic across Nigeria. It is not safe, should not be allowed, but I mean, that's not the business we're in. Our business is to offer people the alternative, to listen, this stuff that you're eating, and you know that cashews got acid as well. This stuff that you're eating, you don't know how it's been processed, you don't know where it's been processed, and so this stuff can be dangerous to you, right? But in our case, you can come to our factory, you can walk around, you can audit what we're doing, you can see exactly what we're doing. And I think, yeah, you have to pay a bit more for that, but that makes sense, right? I mean, how much do you put on your life?
And the question for my, how do you sort out the distribution and marketing? Because that's a lot of our viewers have this issue.
Well, distribution and marketing, I mean, I have to say, that's somewhere where we're learning and growing, because Nigeria food in Nigeria at the moment is mostly dominated by big distributors across the country, and you have to figure out a way to play there. You have to get distributors. You have to design your route to market such that you have your distributors who are helping you move the product across the country. Because, you know, there's direct sales, but you've got to be careful, because with direct sales comes a lot of receivables. I mean, and how many people are you going to chase around, right? Online is not yeah, it's okay, but it's nowhere near where it should be. Because if you look at some of the other markets we're going into, like the UK or the US, the e-commerce platform like Amazon are a genuine alternative to supermarkets. In Nigeria, it's not the case. Nigeria, I mean, people hardly sell that much on Jumia. But so if you're not dealing with supermarkets, you're not going to sell anything. But distribution remains a challenge. And I think, any entrepreneur who can sit and figure out a way to solve that, there's a lot of business that will come from small FMCG companies to that.
Even supermarkets can owe a lot, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, this market is a very interesting market because, you know, people sit down with you and negotiate very hard on 30 days payment terms or 45 days payment terms, but then have no intention of paying you in 30 days or 45 days. But it's a big negotiation point. They pay you in 60, in 90. And then some supermarkets there's one supermarket we pulled out now, but they've been owing us for 6 months. Mm-hmm. We've been at it, but then only to discover that someone they've been owing for 2 years. So I'm thinking, okay, all right, maybe, you know, if people are sharing their stories, you know, a lot of people will not do business with a company that thinks it's okay to owe, you know, a business, an up-and-coming business for 2 years, mm-hmm. you know, stuff like That's that.
Great. So how do you want to grow now? What's the next, for the exporting and for the retail products?
Yeah, so for Food Pro, I mean, I think, first of all, the thing we need to do and we need to do very quickly is diversification of products. Because we started off from cashew and cashew is very involved, we couldn't really focus on diversification. But that's something we have to do now. Offer consumers trust the brand, so we have to offer consumers a wide range on that brand. And I'm interested in doing a lot of derivative products. You know, not cashews anymore, but can you do cashew-based products that are healthy products that replace some of the things we consume at affordable prices? That's for Nigeria, but you know, for the rest of the globe, it's really if you look at the coasts of the US, cashew-based products, you could be a cashew player and be very successful. Cashew-based products are have coming up at a rate, at an alarming rate. Milk, flour, butter, all cookies, all kinds of stuff on the coast of the US. So you know, the Californias and the Floridas of this world, in Europe a bit as well, but the European market is not as easy as the American market. The American market is big and is open to different kinds of products. So for us, it's product diversification, and then also, I mean, you know, but for me personally, you know, I mean, you know, obviously this is what Food Pro is doing. I want to figure out ways to, yes, obviously continue to grow Food Pro, but do other things like, you know, help other people through their journey and all of that stuff. So,
and export to local market, I mean, your numbers, is it more dependent?
Export is much bigger, yeah. Significantly much bigger. And the thing, the beauty of export is, it's one person that's owing you, the structures to allow you get your money when you need your money. And, you know, and the thing is that the export market understands cashews, values cashews, and pays the right price for cashews. The domestic market, there's still a lot of, but why is a guy in traffic selling his own at X and you're selling your own at X? And then there's the almighty granules that it's, granules is just a lot cheaper than cashews. So that's a challenge.
So the key learnings, milestones, challenges along the way.
Well, so for me, I mean, if I was to start this again, the first focus would be, you know, just understanding what the access to market is. Who are we going to sell these products to? Are there enough of them? And how are we going to sell it to them before we move an inch? Because access to market, once you have access to market, everything else can be figured out, right? You know, but we took for granted in the beginning access to market. Right, we thought, yeah, look, if we can produce it, they will buy it. But if I'm to do it again, you start from access to market, and that access to market then, you know, defines everything else. And then if there's anything else, maybe Also, I mean, I would do an all equity funded play. So I wouldn't take any bank facilities at the beginning until you've gotten to a point where your cash flows are very stable, everything can be defined, you know, because if you introduce banks or lenders into the case very early, then, you know, they can be very disruptive. They can be very disruptive because sometimes when you start a business, things don't happen as fast as they need to. And when they don't, banks are the least understanding people in the world. Even worse in Nigeria, so, you know.
You know that way.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I guess it's already like the complexities of the industry, or is there something specific in the agripreneur?
Well, so if I look at agriculture in Nigeria, between processor and producers, there are too many middlemen between producer and the processor. And the way to add value is to just compress that supply chain and connect producers and processors directly. There's no need for, I mean, there can be the middleman of the logistics who brings it from the farm to you. But this concept of, if you take cashews for instance, in Nigeria, the cashew supply chain between producer and processor is too long. You can have as many as 4, 5, 6 people, and they all have to make a living off of doing nothing. Because all they're doing is moving the product from this warehouse to that warehouse. And then they add a margin to it. From this warehouse to that warehouse. Add a margin to it before it gets to the guy who needs to use it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. So, compared to us, you already made it. So what advice do you have for us, you know?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I've made anything. But I think, look, if I would say anything to anyone out there, I think the first thing is just you have to have clarity of what you want to do, clarity of the goal, you know, the why you're doing this thing, and it's got to be very big, so that when you hit those speed bumps, because you're going to hit many speed bumps, you're not going to very quickly disappear. And if I would say anything to, you know, anyone, an entrepreneur in Nigeria or non-entrepreneur, is it is time to be very ambitious. We just need to be very, very ambitious. And you know, if you combine ambition with very clear goals, and you know, and then all the little things like, you know, understand access to market, make sure you're not taking bank loans too early, all those things, I think you can make a go of it and be very successful.
Somebody asked me the question the other day, I would like to ask you also, would you have liked to start earlier as by age, or are you perfectly fine where you are?
I'm fantastically fine where I am. I think, you know, everyone must go through a journey. You must understand that what you're going through is your journey, and you must embrace your journey, whether you start early or you start late. And frankly speaking, I think it was Gary Vaynerchuk that I was listening to, and said, oh, he's about to turn, at the time he was about to turn 44, and he was talking about how young he is, you know. And I think if I say something about this continent or this country, is people get old too early. So you see 60-year-olds, you see 70-year-olds starting to move around like, oh my God, you know, this is what I've been around for 100 years, you know. But the truth is, I attended a Tony Robbins session in California a few years ago, and there was this guy, Joseph McClayden III. And so this guy was jumping around the stage and blah, 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 blah. So, you know, after I was trying to figure out, look, I assume this guy was in his early 40s, right? So when the guy told us it was his 60s, I started thinking about all the 60-year-olds I know in Nigeria who look like, and I realized that, you know, it's really a function of how you treat yourself and how you see yourself. You know, it's if you treat your body properly, right? If you treat your mind properly, I mean, what is age?
So what do you do to keep centered, to keep fit mentally, physically?
Well, I mean, so obviously, I mean, I try to exercise a lot. I'm part of a running club, which I have not shown up for a while because it's just not I don't know why I've not shown up. But I try to do about 30 minutes of exercise, intense exercise in the morning. I think also the eating part is a little bit of a challenge. You know, I'm trying to sort that out as well. And then, you know, I read a lot. I read a lot, and then I also try to bend reality to fit what I want. So, and what I mean by that is, you know, I figure out a way to interpret every situation in a positive manner. You know, and a lot of that I learned from very difficult challenges that I go through. You go through a challenge and then you realize the only reason why you suffer through that challenge was your mindset, the way you looked at it, right? If you just change the way you look at everything, you don't have to suffer, you know, because suffering is really a function of how you've interpreted the situation. And I mean, I can say this now because I'm looking back at 2018 and some parts of 2019, and I look at things that I felt really bad about, and I realized that I just suffered through those things unnecessarily. My suffering through it didn't change the situation. So what was the point of suffering? Why not just, okay, this is this, now this is what I'm gonna do, and keep a very positive mindset. And it's important to realize that whoever you are enough, right? Whoever you are, you are enough. And once you understand that, then the rest is, you must just go through, is a roller coaster challenge, you know, and you must enjoy it. And because pick any situation, how you feel during that situation doesn't change the situation. It just changes how you feel. And you can decide to be miserable or you can decide to be very happy. It's up to you.
Really interesting. I mean, also the mindset you need as an entrepreneur here, you know, probably specifically in Nigeria.
So, I mean, thanks for all the interesting questions. I've enjoyed it. But, you know, I've been curious as we started to try to understand, you know, I mean, in a country where we're obsessed about meat, you know, how did you, A, become a vegetarian and choose the journey that you're on trying to create a meat substitute?
Well, I guess it started as a personal story. I've been a vegetarian vegan 25 years.
Wow.
And reasons were, I guess, more the health thing, even though when I was in my early 20s, there wasn't any health issue, but I immediately felt like, wow, this is giving me extra energy, you know, and then food safety, but looking at the animal products, there were a lot of stories out there, mad cow disease, and something was telling me, it's maybe not right, but I slowly got into it. That was my personal background, and then being in Nigeria, and there was no supporting network, and whatever you do, you need people, no restaurants, and we started with a restaurant, first vegan restaurant, Veggie Victory, and people reacted, and said, that's nice. It was very early, 7 years ago, and then, but how can you have more reach? And then we developed a product that everybody can cook at home. So it's a meat substitute, and 100% plant-based, and you can cook it like meat, but it's not meat. That's our way of sustaining people like you. You know, you need to be healthy. I mean, all the stress in life itself. If your body fails,
I mean, that's the end.
That's the end. I mean, yeah. Who are you going to struggle with? You know, and I really felt like it works for me. You know, it centers me, the diet, and then the exercise. So why not sharing it? And I believe, yeah, it's a challenging environment. Everybody wants to eat meat, but I don't believe it's really good, you know. At least now just think, reduce it a bit, and then you don't need to suffer while you're not eating meat, but you can really have your asu, your nkwobi, but
and you make all those
without the guilt feeling,
with plant-based, so asu and all that stuff,
100% plant-based. So there's no animal fats, no cholesterol, and it has the texture. It's about the texture. You know, there's globally meat substitute industry is growing,
yeah.
Also because of climate consideration. In Africa, it's mostly health. You know, individual, we're looking at health because people are making the connections. You know, and but also, yeah, climate, animal rights, a lot of factors come in. And we are in a growing population here, massively growing. How are we going to feed? We're already struggling feeding 200 million. So what about 400 million in 20 years? We have a severe protein deficiency in Africa. We need protein from everywhere, and it cannot come from the way we do cattle or import frozen chicken. We need solutions on the ground. Yeah?
And you know, from a business perspective, I mean, how have you found, you know, growing your business? Because, you know, again, it's like, you know, going to people who live in the middle of Katu and saying, listen, you will no longer eat meat. You eat something that tastes like meat. It's almost like meat, but it's not meat. You know, I mean, have you found the take up on that?
Yeah, of course, it's very unique and very early. People always thought, it's crazy, meat substitutes, you know, vegan, who wants to be vegan, you know? But I looked at global trends and some things are changing. People see, want to go for a healthier lifestyle. I think there's a paradigm shift. You know, we have celebrities now going vegan, Beyonce, Kevin Hart, you know, and everybody wants to live forever and not with blood pressure by the age of 40 or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So they are realizing you need to exercise, you know. Exercise is one big thing, but diet, exercise without the right diet is won't get you very far. So I knew that there is we are getting there, you know. Also the products I'm seeing, like your product, really good quality things, you know. I eat cashews much more than groundnuts, you know. You see that shift, and for me, meat substitution is just another step. Bold, I admit. People still think it's in Africa, but I have a German background. I saw the same thing in Germany 30 years ago. Everybody was, you know, vegan, vegetarian, but now it's like
it's everywhere. So what's the growth plan? I mean, is it, you know, a lot of restaurants, or is it going to be are you going to be producing, you know, products which you put in supermarkets, or
we have the same growth challenges, you know, marketing, distribution, behavior change, key things, you know. It needs money. Somebody told me, an investor, behavior change, man, is expensive, you know, because you need to educate people.
Yeah.
It's all in your mind. So for us, it's quite, we have one way, is you need to eat it. Otherwise, like, you are still skeptical about it, you know, when we had the discussion before.
Yeah.
You need to eat it. Once you eat it, you have an idea what it is, and then all the prejudices are, so we know we need to get our product into people's mouth, and then but literally the distribution channels is, how do I get my product to Benue? You know, it's not easy, you know. We are in Spa, but Spa has 16 branches, you know. It's not like America, where you go to make a deal with Walmart and then next week you're in 20,000. I mean, you said it perfectly. Whoever breaks that distribution thing,
yes.
Dangote will be small compared to that, you know?
No, I agree. I think most small businesses are battling to do that. And the community is suffering for that, because there's a lot of good products that are not getting out there just because no one knows what it is. They don't have enough money to do marketing, mm-hmm. and talkers, you know, they can't invest in distribution, because everybody building their own distribution doesn't really work.
Not efficient, I mean.
Yeah.
So that's where we are in, but definitely multiplicators, like we are talking now to restaurant chains.
Right.
But you need to always do they ask us, do customers already want that? You know. So it's a bit.
I think something you should definitely consider is fast food, veggie fast foods, because, I mean, you know, if we can get to, because increasingly when you look at most people, they're always on the move, you know. And I mean, these days I make a conscious effort to try to sit down and have a meal somewhere, but oftentimes you're trying to grab something and go. So I mean, you know. But thanks, I definitely will try the product.
Yeah, come to our restaurant, you know, and everybody.
Who knows, maybe I'll become a vegetarian.
So, Mr. Ayo, thank you very much for this very interesting conversation. And I benefited already a lot, and I hope our viewers and Faith Foundation community. So, of course, I wish you still the best for the cashew business, because that's big, you know. And I hope we see you soon again.
No, thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
thank you for listening to this episode of Journeys in Entrepreneurship. This interview was recorded on the 14th of November 2019 at the Millennium Apartments, Lekki, Lagos. Journeys in Entrepreneurship's executive producer is Adenike Adeyemi. Our technical producer and director is Elo Iyamu. This series was reviewed by Miriam Adeoti, Feishaya Shogbeson, and Loretta Ihelmere. The artwork and design was done by Kingsley Effiong, while the video production and editing was by UVisual. The theme song for this series, which you're also listening to now, was put together by Tani and Shemilore Oludipe. To watch videos of this recording, please visit faithfoundation.org/podcast and also the Faith Foundation YouTube channel. Remember to join us next week Friday for an all new episode. Thank you.